Hi, I'm Ed Nevard, and thanks for joining us on the first episode of Cybershow on the Go. In these episodes, we take a break from our usual studio workflow to get out and about. We'll be walking along the beaches and through the forests of the south of England, far from our screens and keyboards. Wise thinkers have known that physical exercise and changing scenery stimulate ideas and facilitate arguments. So, no wonder that many dull work meetings seated in stuffy offices produce almost nothing of human value. Now, these candid rambles are, for the most part, uncensored and filled with personal opinion. So, discretion is advised for younger listeners and corporate types. Inspired by Alan Watts, whose later recordings experimented with walks along the California coastline, we've decided to just let the conversation wander in what he might have called a wiggly way, without trying too hard to pull it back to any particular topic or impose a structure. However, walking along the trail means our recordings are occasionally interrupted, perhaps when meeting or talking to strangers, or taking a break for refreshments. So, to make it easier to follow, we'll signpost segments with a few words to help listeners tune in to where the conversation has turned. For these recordings, Andy and Helen are using Sennheiser G4 600 MHz radio packs with Rode Lavaliers with a Tascam 680 recorder. This recording was made on Saturday the 10th of June 2023.
So this is our Cyber Show on the go, and we're just down at the beach in Bournemouth, and we're going to take a nice stroll over the headland and talk about a whole bunch of topics while getting some exercise.
And some mindfulness, you know, resting our brains.
Resting our brains. Well, maybe not resting our brains.
All right, pretending to rest our brains like techies do, right?
Yeah. And being inspired by the scenery.
Yeah.
There's a really good, Socrates, I think, he said, no good idea ever arose without a good walk.
Right. And they used to walk around a lot, didn't they? And take their shoes off.
And the Greeks did the philosophy. They walk around and walk and philosophise and walk and philosophise. So we thought it'd be a great idea to just get out of the studio, right?
Do some exercise.
Do some exercise.
We're all stuck on computers all the time, staring at screens. Get some fresh air.
So Cyber Show on the Go is an energetic and more grounded and more human of kind of a podcast, right?
Philosophising.
With more philosophising on a walk.
Yeah. They've made it more acceptable to show off your lives using sort of social media. They go, oh, look at my amazing life and me in my private jet. And people like it. They flock to it because they want that life. And I guess that maybe that's why we're becoming more selfish, because we want that life and we like looking at it on social media, so we don't challenge them enough.
I don't.
No, you don't. Nor do I. I think it's deplorable. You know, detest it. It's horrible. But so many people do. Why is Love Island a big thing? It's just attractive people, isn't it? Like, again, back to peering into the lives of attractive people, wanting to be somebody or to fuck somebody. Isn't that what Freud said?
But we are attractive people.
I know, right. But I mean, like, this is what we're becoming in society. We're, like, becoming
vicarious
birds. Yeah.
Is that what it is? I'm trying to just
put... peer into... Yeah, we are. We are becoming more vicarious.
There's so many complex and subtle words around this area to do with narcissism, vanity...
Right. But we're developing technology so we just stay in our little cave and just peer into someone else's life and not have our own.
Voyeurism.
Voyeurism. We're becoming full little cave-dwelling creatures that just spy on the people that can afford to go out and do things.
What is that all about? Is that sort of parasitical? I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's something in psychology. I think it's maybe driven in looks and sex, and that's what these influencers do. You don't see a 35, 40-year-old influencer around much anymore. You don't see some, you know, 40-year-old doing makeup lessons very often. You do, because I watch them now, where I'm like, how do I hide my bags? But it's usually a man telling me how to do things like that.
They disappear when you smile.
Who does? On my bags. Yeah. I should smile more often. Yeah. I'll get smile lines then, right? It depends how tired you are. I was saying to my IT manager at the quiz, I didn't wear makeup in my 20s. But now if I don't wear makeup at the weekend and I forget and I go to the shops, people are like, right, follow her around. She can't afford makeup. She looks tired. She must be on drugs.
She's in troll mode.
She's on crack. She must be. Look at those dark rings. It's like, I'm just old. It's just age. Yeah. Men can just walk around with all your age on your face.
The ravages of time.
If a woman of the same age just goes, yeah, let's just pop to the shops, get some bread. All the men are like, oh, yeah. And the women are going, oh, my God. This is not okay. You didn't put all this drying up stuff that makes you older on your face.
Hey, well, the upshot is just the face recognising CCTV doesn't know it's you.
Exactly. Every 7 years you get a refresh. You forget your past is deleted. That's quite a positive.
Helen and Andy talk about the fakeness of online influencers.
But we exploit each other's bodies now. Look at the bloody, what's it called? Instagram and selling like the prime energy drink. Right, influencers. That's where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
They are just using their bodies. That is, they're exploiting their looks and their youth to sell you shit that you shouldn't be buying.
That's not OnlyFans, right?
OnlyFans
is basically
gorgeous
porn,
people.
Right?
I know that is. No.
Okay. Yeah.
No, this is on social media. They're like young. So one of the biggest influencers is a gorgeous bloke. The girls are just screaming at him like he's a boy band. So he's selling his looks. And he goes, hey, I'm gorgeous, do you want to buy this? And they're like, yeah, I'll buy that.
But that's absolutely what advertising, that's what advertising always was. In the sort of in the post-Edward Bernays, but pre-hipster advertising.
Now it's just young people upload themselves to TikTok and YouTube or whatever, and then the companies come along and go, you can sell shit with that face, come along.
Okay.
That's exploiting pure look, because it's just going, hey, buy this product, am I gorgeous? Do what I say. That's so physically exploitative.
So they become
as a result of
controlled
technology.
Pawns of those companies that can just put words into their mouths as well.
I'm already training my son because he's like, I really want prime drink. I'm, why? Why do you want it? Oh, because this influencer, he's really cool. Why is he cool? Because he looks good. Okay, other than that, what's he done? Oh, nothing. Do you think he's a clever person? No. Do you think he's trustworthy? No. Yeah. Why do you want his drink? Oh, because the kids told me I want it. Right. Let's break this down. Okay, influence. I said there are rules in advertising. People can't just go, hey, buy this really dangerous product that definitely doesn't do what it says on the tin, right?
I'm just thinking of the explosive detecting divining rods that were sold to Iraqi engineers, right?
And they don't work.
And they're literally getting their legs blown off.
This is the same thing.
With complete fake science.
We don't allow people to do that, but influencers can just do that. They can sell you anything, right? And they're selling things like, you've got ADHD, give me $4,000. You don't. They're doing extreme things. They're like convincing people that they need to go on antidepressants when they probably don't, just to get a paycheck. So it's gone to this dark extreme where it's even mental health services are now being influenced, you know? What was it? Something that I'm really angry about? There's an app that helps women do natural birth control. The natural method. And every single service has gone, we're not endorsing this.
So
we're not allowing advertising. But influencers, the gorgeous ones, the exploited people being exploited for their looks, have gone online and they're posing like in a yoga position going, I feel amazing. Come get pregnant, essentially. So these women do it because of influencers. And that's not true.
It's bogus science.
And it's advertising that's banned.
This is really interesting because what you're saying is it's making its way into social media and things like that because by advertising standards in a regulated ecosystem, you wouldn't be allowed to do that.
No, it's just an influencer, right? It's just some person sharing their opinion.
Yes.
But they're being paid. They've been paid to share their opinion.
Right.
So it falls beneath those cracks of those laws. So you as a company can't advertise it because it's a lie.
Mm.
But someone who uses your product, so they say, is allowed to say, oh, I love it.
So at this point in the cyber show, you know, we're not paid by anybody.
No.
It's worth listeners remembering that, right? We are not in anybody's pocket right now.
We are not sponsored.
And you'll listen to this episode back in 10 years and go, yeah, and then what? Yeah.
Those were the good old days
when you used to talk real shit, right?
When there were no restrictions. You can't say that. You can't say this. You'll upset these people. No mention of these big companies. We'll get sued.
Helen and Andy talk about voyeurism and scopophilia.
So the episode that we need to talk about later is me and Ed have found the Ring doorbells, they've been finding that the employees have been looking into girls' bedrooms and them on the toilet and then sharing it on the internet, including children. We've got a Hoover that filmed a load of kids and people having a poop and then it put it straight on the internet. Tesla have been doing it as well.
Who have?
Tesla. Tesla actually watched someone die on purpose and then they all sat around and watched it over and over again. It murdered a child. The machine murdered a kid and the cameras caught it like spattering the child.
Oh God.
And obviously they kind of have to watch it because the car's not meant to do that, but they were sharing it and sitting around and laughing and it went on their WhatsApp and stuff. It's in the article, it's disgusting.
Oh really?
They've been looking at dead bodies and sharing images of people in car crashes with each other.
So the topic here is what we call digital privilege, is when people are in a position maybe to review other people's material.
They shouldn't be sharing it. they're not doing it ethically. I think that's the point. And that we need to stop putting cameras on bloody everything. So we were hoping that you'd bring up the, you know, the doll with the fucking cameras in its eyes.
Creepy doll.
Yeah, creepy doll. But this is happening more and more and more. We're accepting it in our cars, in our bloody houses. We're buying this technology and we're just shoving it in our houses. And now our children are being filmed on the toilet. And apparently the public aren't either aware of it or don't really understand the dangers. And so I really want to raise awareness of that.
Okay.
And yeah, I've been having people ask me, can you make some more accessible like cybersecurity for just everyday people? How do I look after myself on the internet? My nan's too afraid to go on her computer now.
Kate loves the idea of the nana, you know.
Yeah, nana and kids kind of section.
And the rating. Ed did some prompt engineering to see if he could come up with a few better suggestions.
Yeah.
That because he said, well, the normie rating was a little bit sort of patronising.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we're experts and you're normies.
Yeah.
So that's not good.
I don't want that.
Okay, cool.
So I think we'll call it accessible
accessibility index or something like that.
And that's what they say when it comes to science, isn't it? That's what's his name? Brian Cox. Yeah. So they call him, he's allowing, what they say, he makes really hard physics accessible to the public.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to do. That's what I want to go with that series. How do we look after ourselves online? Or a beginner's guide. He said, like, dummies. You know, like the old dummy books that we used to have in the 90s?
Yeah.
Cybersecurity for dummies.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we're going, but without the offensive title.
Yeah.
So it's cybersecurity cybersecurity for everyone.
Security. Civil cyber. I mean, that's the sort of formal title that I want to really, really keep pushing. Civic cybersecurity.
Yeah, or cybersecurity for everyone.
So. Okay.
And accessible.
Me too. No, I totally get it. Not all of our output's going to be like that.
No, no,
because
no.
we want we to want... also appeal to really techie people.
So we need to separate it and have it on that section.
Yeah.
Advice and things like that. Because there's a lot of people that I work with that are older who say to me, oh, you're the cybersecurity expert. Can you give me some paperwork or something or anything where I can take that home?
Yeah.
And actually, I'm noticing that we're having the things that are risking us the most at the moment is like people are leaking their emails and things and their private data. So they're leaking our stuff in their private lives by accident. And that's happening because they're not very good at home.
Yeah.
And I keep trying to hint to my IT manager that we actually need to do some training about how people look after their own shit at home because it can affect our workplace significantly.
Absolutely. So Kate and I had this conversation today. And it was about Donald Trump.
Right.
And it started off with Donald Trump. So there's a clear grey area. So there's a clear spectrum from stuff like, say, the president taking home nuclear secrets.
Right.
No.
He put them in the toilet.
Not okay, right?
No.
On the other hand, say a doctor takes home somebody's cancer records or something, and they're working, and they are, you know, they're diagnosing stuff and solving it because they're working on it in their spare time.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a psychotherapist who's got patients, they're constantly thinking about them. Teachers, I've got to mark students' work. Clearly, that's where work melds into other people's normal life, right?
Right. Yeah, you take it home with you all the time. But there are certain things that you can. I have stuff that I wouldn't even dream of taking home at work, like financial records. They are locked down, so we even have screen protectors. And actually, you can tell the difference between someone who understands that and has that awareness. Because when I go and see payroll or someone in top finance, I don't go straight round and look at their screen, even when I'm there to do.
No, there's etiquette. We used to call it netiquette, but it's etiquette, right? It's, you don't like you look away when someone's typing their password in. It's
I do. You don't look.
But a lot of people don't do that. They just, I saw you type your password.
The other day, my top finance lady said, oh, my PDF won't print. Can you do it? It's an extremely sensitive document.
Yeah.
And I've got to stand there, and it came out, and I literally just held it in a way to and walked straight in and said, here you go. And she could very clear that I didn't even look at the front cover and that it was all in order. And that's why they trust you, because they understand that you know not to look at those documents from the start because they're sensitive.
Yeah.
And so Donald Trump doesn't have that, does he? He doesn't have this... He just went, fuck it, I'll take it home. And he just doesn't have that part of his brain where he understands sensitive knowledge and what to do with it and non-sensitive knowledge. And I guess he had training. He's the bloody president. What? He just ignored it.
Yeah.
And some people do. They just go, oh, no, I know better.
Yeah, they don't take it very seriously. Look, if people are going to work from home more and more, there's two outcomes.
Right.
One is that the work ends up intruding into people's homes and you end up with having to have cybersecurity enforced upon you in your own home.
We do
and that's
already.
A dystopian nightmare.
we do, bossware.
Or you get people educated so that they're socially and responsible and switched on enough to know, okay, that laptop stays in my study, kind of thing.
And I don't go on Facebook and leave that running in the background when I'm doing really sensitive financial work for my business on a VPN.
Exactly.
And that's something that is actually, even though the firewall may be in place, if you've got a marketing team, for example, they have to access that. But you don't know if they're clicking things that they shouldn't be. They could be doing anything. Mm-hmm. And they're now doing that on their home laptop and their work laptop, and those are merging. So, yeah. Like, my laptop at the moment, because I work from home on it, every time I open it up, SharePoint goes, hey, do you want to go to work?
Yep.
And actually, I find that sick days have gone. So if you have an operation now, they go, well, I just work from home. So you've had an operation, and now you're sitting there working from home. People have had their heads down toilets throwing up with their laptop next to them because they're supposed to be working. And you literally type 6 words an hour or whatever while you throw up, and you get paid, and they think they're doing a good thing for you. But actually, you need to recover. Right. Some illnesses, like operations and stuff, you need that week to just lay in bed and get better. And now they're like laying in bed with a laptop doing their work.
So unboundaried workplaces because... Right. So what we should do is a whole episode, I think, on work boundaries and that sort of thing.
Right. Actually, we just found out yesterday that Boss wears a thing, so they're not so keen on her working from home. And I said to her, have you worked from home before? She said, yeah. And I said, did you work really hard? She went, not really. And I went, yeah, they knew. No, they can't see what I do at home. And I'm like, of course they can. You're using, like, Microsoft products. Those have logs. Every time you type, that has a log. It tells them what you've done. This person submitted this document. This person's document is this big. They've written 2,000 words today. It's all in that log. And that's the less invasive logs. There are people who can just activate a camera and watch you in your house. And she was like, oh, my God. And I said, yeah, there is a range of companies. We are a good company. We try not to spy on people, and we trust them. And if they break that trust, they might not get promoted, whatever. They'll stay in employment. But that's not everyone. There are call centres that can calculate how long you look at your phone, and then they'll just sack you. Sorry, we don't need you anymore. And she was like, oh, I didn't know that. It's like, well, I don't think everyone... The thing is she's got admin access because she works in IT. And it's like, you've got access to the bloody logs, love.
Yeah, you should know that.
And you shouldn't be telling anyone that. Don't go to work and be like, they watch you. Because you'll get told off for scaring the population again.
Helen and Andy talk about the need for digital self-defence.
How do your children navigate that in today's digital world? There's just so much fake news. And actually, Finland are way ahead of us.
Well, they've got what we might call intellectual self-defence classes.
Right, for children.
And I've always thought that that's the sort of thing that we should... You know, NCSC, or maybe, I don't know, what's for propaganda, like say 77 Brigades,
right.
Job should be in civic cybersecurity and programmes of education to get, because that is a form of national self-defence, of national defence, as
it
well
is,
as
absolutely.
Personal self-defence. Is if you've got a populist, a dumb as fuck, and buying everything that they're, you know,
well, it's
pushed
from
at
Russian
them,
trolls
whether
house,
it comes from
it?
Russia
right.
or wherever, that is not as a secure position.
No, it's not, and it's absolutely terrifying, and it's causing an imbalance. You don't know one morning to the next, really anymore, what could happen, because someone could come along on the internet and completely change everything because they shout the loudest and they're gorgeous. I mean, that's the big fear, isn't it? And we've seen this before. This was the rise of fascism, you know. Isn't this what we did 70-something
years
ago?
Well, Hitler wasn't gorgeous.
No, he wasn't.
He really just didn't have the zazz, right?
He shouted, he came in and he used a situation to manipulate people. We're seeing that every day, and we're kind of running to it.
Anger seems to be righteous anger seems to be the best bait. I mean, that was the kind of Hitler thing, right? Righteous anger plus a scapegoat. And I think that formula is well documented. But I think there are other formulas which we haven't really thought of. It's uncharted territory of how malinfluence can propagate and in what kind of forms.
Exactly.
That they're probably, you know... We need a mixture of psychology and strategic, and this is how it's possibly going to play out.
And that's how you teach children these things, and that's what Finland have done. They expose them to misinformation and real information that's almost written in a very poor way, and they go, OK, let's break it down.
So which one of those was for real?
Yeah, which one's real? They're both written poorly, they're both written in a bad style, but there are some real key giveaways. Which story seems a bit outrageous? Yeah, it's not real. Which story is using more politically driven language and more manipulative language?
Yeah.
And I do that as a regular forum. So I watch things and I want to hear what they're saying and how they do their production. And it frightens me. You get these misinformation films with huge budgets. Yeah. They do really well. They get really good voice actors in. And the things they say are terrifying. It's so manipulative. Oh, you can keep believing that if you want to, as if you're stupid for not following the misinformation. And there's no regulation on that whatsoever. You use this huge production and it convinces people.
So it's sophisticated, well-produced psyops that's out there.
Yeah, but by who?
It doesn't matter. I mean, let's deal with the theatre as it is.
Right.
Yeah?
How do we counter it? We need to sit and do what Finland do. They've got no children, believe in misinformation right now.
And I'm saying somebody goes, Dad, you're a joker. But for real life.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the phrase that's going around in the sort of 7 to 10 group at the moment. Is yeah. When I was in the 7 to 10 group, we would say, Jimmy Reckon. You know, Jimmy Hill, right? And it was, you're a liar.
Right.
And we'd call out lies much more and in a more aggressive way.
Right.
Whereas now, there's a sort of more general assumption amongst kids of they're sort of incredulous of, what? No, I don't believe that. But if something is true, then they'll call it out. They say, no, for real life.
Yeah, that's real.
For real life, yeah.
That makes sense. And it's sad that the children have got to have navigated already at seven, have worked out that half the stuff that they might be exposed to is probably not real, and they've had to navigate that already. We need to help them.
Mm.
And that's what I do with my children. When I see them interacting with something on the internet that needs, I don't just say, well, you can't watch that. We have a conversation. What are you watching? Why were you drawn to that? Why did you engage with it? How did you feel when you watched it? Do you think it was real? And actually, your child will surprise you.
Mm-hmm.
I go, oh no, I found this, and loads of people had looked at it, and I know it wasn't against my, you know, rules, so I watched it, but actually I don't agree with it.
Mm.
And that's that 7 to 10 group, and they're able to critically think, and we have to keep helping them with that, because they're going to lose it. They're going to lose it, and they're just going to go out as teenagers and get glued on their phone,
sure.
And that's it.
I just pick out a danger in the possible in that as an interpretation, is that it may be that younger age group who haven't matured emotionally are actually much better at rational sorting and filtering.
Right.
But when they get past teenagers, they're more open to a different forms of persuasion, which are not
social.
About stating a case or making an argument.
It becomes a breeding
they're
thing.
They're purely subliminal and emotional.
It's to attract a mate at that age, isn't it? That becomes your primary focus at that age. And I guess if someone that you like is looking at something and they believe something, you're more inclined to get into that with those people, that group, because of reading. It ups your reading chances. Those are the breeding years. So it's not a surprise that they're glued to their phone and they're emotionally responsive in that way.
Yeah.
It's hormone driven as well, isn't it? It's that time where you're an adolescent, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, we need to get in and in an educational way and say, hey guys, before you get to that stage, can we just get some critical thinking and get you exposed to some things that you're going to be exposed to anyway and actually talk about those. Break them down and give you the tools to do that yourself. That's what we're not doing. But yeah, it's really scary, the influencers side of it. My children are, I guess, getting the training that they need to balance that. And they try and share that with their friends. But honestly, they would buy a dead parrot, thinking, you know, the sketch, the Monty Python sketch. They'd buy it if an influencer told them the parrot was alive. Right? It's dead. No, a gorgeous person comes in and goes, it's fine, I bought one yesterday, it's lovely. And they go, okay, I'll buy it. You know, they lose that sense.
There is an example somewhere, I think, in Ethics for Hackers of a patient who's declared clinically dead. And then is so obviously breathing, but it's too late. They've sighed. And it's like, do you know what I mean? It sounds like something probably made up
from
a kind of Stephen King novel, where, you know, you're going to go into the furnace anyway. I'm like, really sorry, you know, but the machine that says goes ping said, you're dead.
Yeah, literally.
And it's too late. We've already pressed return.
Right.
Yeah.
That feels to me actually a good idea, like an analogy or a metaphor of where we are actually going, I guess. Is that the button tells you now what to do? I guess we're losing our own critical thinking. And I'm seeing that with children. They'll just, a pretty person goes, do something, and they go, okay. And also Trump, he shouts the loudest, people follow him. So you've got really gorgeous people that can sell you anything, honestly. And there's no rules. And then you've got people who just shout and scream and make stuff up.
It's descending to chaos.
It's fucked, man. I've been at work the whole time. I don't have any time for them.
Just go and dump these in that bin. Yeah,
yeah. I love it. It's so beautiful. I usually go to the beach on the other side of here. So we walk through here and then we go straight down there.
Should we do that then? Should we walk around that, take that path, go back down onto the beach?
Let's do that.
And walk along the prom, sort of something like that. We'll have a bit of sea noise, but it won't be too bad.
I usually camp here in the summer for a few days with the kids just to come to literally Muddersfoot Bay.
Lovely.
You get even nicer seagulls around here. They're really polite. I like those birds. They sit near you and they're like, hello.
Helen and Andy talk about algorithms behind public CCTV cameras.
So I want to look. I want to do this research on this camera. I want to make sure that it is looking at dodgy people. Like, I might wear a hoodie, like get Ed in a hoodie and make him look dodgy as fuck, and get him to walk underneath. Start sending like really skinny people and go under there at the bottle of vodka and make it look like you.
Just the scientist in me is thinking, how do you do that so that what you collect is actually statistically significant?
I know.
You
know?
But it's an interesting experiment.
Watch
you
it watch. On a Friday night.
Who watches the watchers? You put cameras watching cameras.
Yeah, right.
Right. We look at who they look at.
Right.
And from that data, we can see that the bias is coming out physically, visibly in the system on that level. But how many hours would you need to collect in order to turn that into a meaningful data set or something that would at least kind of yield to some analysis?
I think you'd need to go and do it like every Friday night for at least 6 weeks, and you'd have to sit there for the same amount of time. And I think a Friday night's good because you're going to get people who... So the crime rate goes massively up at the weekend, mm-hmm. and you're going to have people who are very visibly...
Well, in that case, just do it on Friday and Saturday nights because you might as well collect the most, the richest data that you can,
and we need
right?
to do it consecutively because we can have a one-off because there's a fresher week. They'll make excuses. So we need to see if that's the case. And I want to see if this camera is like looking at certain people like it's on an automated thing. Oh, that person looks dodgy. Oh, that person looks dodgy. And then, mm-hmm. hot lady in a short skirt. Because that's what I've seen happening, which means that there's somebody who can just override it.
You're probably projecting loads of your own bias onto what you think you're seeing in that.
Maybe. Yeah. But that's why I was like, because I was assuming that they were all pre-programmed until I saw that and then was like, hang on. Okay. Why would you now be watching me up the road? And then as soon as you get to a point where I'm no longer interesting because it's my back, you're stuck. Yeah. You put it back on auto mode again and it starts swinging around. These things are horrible. They just go right on you. And I was like, Jesus Christ. You know, so and that makes me very aware. Mm-hmm. And then I'm kind of like on the side, like trying to get away because you're like, oh, it's watching me. Like you move sideways and then it moves with you.
Yeah.
And then you move the other way, you're like, weep, and you're like, oh my fucking God. So yeah, maybe I'm just assuming it's a person and it's not. The camera's just, you know, doing a weird program.
No, it's probably, it's just motion tracking you, right? It's just following you on that mode, right?
Well, who's watching it, though? Is there someone watching it? That's what I want to find out. Let's check. Yeah. Let's find out.
Right.
Let's do this. That sort of stuff. Let's find out. Because Ed said he knows people who do that job. And, yeah, there are people that sit there and they watch all the images on all the cameras and they have the ability to just click on one and then just move it around. So and it's back to this ring door thing. Maybe there are some blokes that shouldn't be doing that job because they like
maybe
voyeurism.
There's a lot of people who shouldn't be doing that job.
Right. And maybe they're voyeurs. That's what I'm saying. Maybe they've given the position to... He's got into it because he's actually a secret voyeur and he likes looking upskirting ladies.
Yeah. But then once you say that, maybe no people should be doing that at all, then it immediately opens up the argument for, well, we'll just get AI to do it.
Yeah, no.
And now you've got pre-programmed biases.
Now we've got even worse. Now it's only getting the black man smoking that one joint and the three white guys killing each other in the corner. It hasn't even filmed. And because we're getting more reliant on technology, no one's even in the park, like a policeman, to check it. And this is what I was saying to someone the other day.
But I wonder if the AIs would develop an interest in breasts and nice asses and good legs. And,
the way it's going, I swear to God.
Because it's working with a data set.
They've had to train it
by watching human operators.
And we'll start watching all the cats as well. Yeah. Oh, cute cat. It's missing the murder. Oh, cat.
Yeah.
We could see in 10 years' time that there are certain groups of society that have been arrested for loads of small crimes. Well, and the crime rate is going up. We're seeing more violent crimes because it's not actually filming violent crimes, because it's filming members of society as opposed to... Like, if I was going to go in there and program that camera to pick up on crime, to cut down on police, I want to look at things like people moving their arm fast, the way people move. Mm. You know, a guy walking, like, all slurry. I want that camera on him, man. They have a certain
analysis, a lot of posture analysis, there's loads of Israeli companies that did work on that because they're looking out for terrorists
right? So
I mean,
not
really
stuff.
Like I'm actually going to blow my suicide pack
we
up
have
right
that
now.
Technology already.
So that gesture analysis stuff is out there and working.
But have they bought the wrong problem? Have the council been sold a programme that's actually biased and they know it and they don't care?
Maybe it doesn't work in a civilian situation when you're looking for shoplifters. I don't know.
Yeah. Or maybe it is trained on terrorists and that's why it's looking at people of a certain colour, because they've just grabbed a London fucking anti-terror subway fucking programme.
Well, who knows?
It's looking for backpacks.
But the big problem is that like once you can't go inside that data and look at it and say, why now? That's the problem with it. It's absolutely inscrutable.
It's locked down.
Well, it's inscrutable. Well. Even if you have all the weights,
they won't let you.
It's a technical problem.
It's too
problem.
Complicated.
It's too complicated.
It's like once the staff's been, code, right?
Once the training data is encoded into the matrices, into the neural networks, you can't then go in and figure out why are you doing that?
It's too complex. Right. So you have to watch what it's doing and analyze its behavior, almost like a fucking child or something. That's the only way to do this. Like, that's how they found out that the fucking dryer wasn't drying black people's hands. And that's what happens. Like, that's code bias.
I thought it was a simple optical sensor.
It fucking is,
that,
and like, the fucking asshole coder decided not to put black people in the code set.
Or had they just, they just trained it.
It was blind. No, it didn't even see their face. You can see it recognising it.
I'm trying to figure it out.
It draws a box on anyone who is not dark. Okay. If you're dark, it thinks you're the background.
Oh, so
it wasn't even
I was thinking
up.
Of like basic hand dryer where you just put your hands underneath.
You do, but it's got facial recognition on it.
Oh, okay. This is a different tech.
Yeah, well, you need to watch this. It's a Netflix series, and it is called Code Bias, and it's been written by a female black coder, and she's like one of us. She does podcasts. She talks about this shit, and she found so much shit. And it was just like there were cameras that literally were only picking, like they'll just go, ooh, a black person. Okay. You know, I think that's what Southampton have bought. You know, I think that's what they have. But they can't get... get money. So one of them is a cash point, and it only dispensed cash or something if they can see that there's actually a person there, and that there's not two people
present.
It just doesn't register black people, so they're not allowed money anymore. And you've got things like Amazon shops, so like they're all run with facial recognition technology. So you won't be able to go up the till and buy your shit because you're invisible to the technology. But it's also quite, she was pointing out, there is some sexism in it as well. So there's like, this technology is just being rolled out and it's got quite a few issues. And I think it is going to disproportionately
there could be some huge There could be some huge advantages in not being seen by it. I'm just kind of wondering about the other side of that.
Yeah, but then they're just falling into the fucking trap that we've placed there. That's shit. We've gone, we better fill these certain groups of society because they're more likely to commit crime because of all these actual things that we did to them. And then as a result, because they can get away with crime and they can't get jobs still, that might actually become reality. We're like catch 22ing that. I don't want to see that in society. I want real crimes to be stopped.
Helen and Andy talk about the vicarious society, voyeurism and scopophilia.
But we've been saying things that like some people are making other people's misfortune their entertainment.
Yeah, literally.
I always said this about CCTV cameras 20 years ago, but I don't think that they prevent crime. That I think that they actually create, they amplify another problem, is that now you've got witness to crimes. And maybe that means you can investigate something, and maybe that means that you can solve a crime. But I don't think that's really the benefit that does come out of CCTV cameras.
No, it's lazy policing. It's like, it's not on CCTV, therefore it didn't happen. And we saw that with that case last year when the lady went missing in the woods. Didn't have camera data, and now they can't police.
But the worst outcome is what we've been talking about for most of the conversation today, which is that you simply then become a cultural artifact of your rape. Or, do you remember that time I got raped? Oh, yeah, we just look it up on YouTube.
Yeah, it's fucked, man. Because someone filmed it, because it was on that.
Well, yeah, somebody it got filmed, it got leaked, became part of the data industrial complex.
There was that case where that woman was being attacked and 30 people just fucking live-streamed it instead of doing anything or called the police. They all got prosecuted. I'm so fucking happy. They filmed it. They just filmed it. It's a voyeurism again, isn't it? Well, and are they going to enjoy that film or sell it on the internet? What are they doing with that?
I think there's a bystander effect there and some kind of vicarious, I've forgotten what the term is, but people just get frozen standing around in a circle with their cameras while somebody's dying. Yep. And they think that they're somehow helping or being witness to that, but without, again,
doing
technology
anything.
Is a way of helping you avoid experiencing reality. So you literally hide behind your phone as you're holding it in front of yourself. That phone divides reality from unreality as you're holding it up.
It's
shielding
barrier.
You. Right. Yeah, it's a barrier.
In fact, that's exactly what we talk about when we study television, is that when you watch television, actually your brain, you are separated from the room, but you're not as much as you think. So it's not a very good barrier. Because when you ask people, oh, do you remember when this event happened? They'll talk about how they saw it on television, but they'll tell you who they were with, not how it looked on the screen.
Yeah.
Because our brains are still going, okay, I'm watching a screen. This isn't real. This isn't real, just doing reality check. We're in the room, actually, with mum, dad. This is not, no one's dying.
It's got the audio-visual contract.
Right.
That's that you enter into a tacit arrangement with your own superego or something to suspend disbelief and to be directed by the director.
I think it's Michel Sean or Tarkovsky
that says that.
So when you put that screen in the way, suddenly it's not real. You can't get traumatised by it because your brain's like, I'm just watching something on a phone.
Yeah.
This isn't real now. But actually, your subconscious is like, yeah, it is, because I can see around the phone. It's happening right there. I can hear it. I can smell it. I'm here. I'm witnessing it. You are the person in the room.
Yeah.
So your subconscious knows, but you're half protecting yourself. You're probably giving yourself problems later on as well. More inclined maybe to get something like PTSD because you're not confronting it at that time.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying about that traumatising effect. There's a line in Clockwork Orange where one of the droogs, who's like one of the gangsters, yeah, says that reality isn't really reality until you video it.
Right.
And that's that amplifying effect of it. It's like not only do they get to witness the gore, but they get to witness the gore times 10. Replicated again and again and again.
Yeah.
And sort of enjoy their pivotal part in that moment of capture.
Right.
Right. There's a sort of vicarious heroism, and it's sort of the bystander effect. I've always thought was best explained by people sort of freezing, and they can't take their eyes off something.
Right.
But now they just put their phone up instead. I've got a camera, I'm shielded from it. So there's a bit in one of the Greek plays where Thrasymachus sees this dead corpse by the side of the road, and he is so angry with himself for being curious, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We all are, though. But, unless you fight it.
Yeah. But he sort of says, oh, he forces himself to go over and look at the corpse. And his eyes feast on that, you know? That's where that phrase comes from. Feast on that, and until you're sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until you're sick of seeing that, and I think sometimes that's what's going on with people when they grab a phone. It's like I've got to kind of this moment isn't really happening, no matter how distressing or whatever.
Right.
It's not happening until I
watch it
later with mates.
Yeah, yeah, and critique it.
Yeah.
I was there, man. I was there. Look at it. It's fucked up. I'd like a Roomba. At least I could hack into it and watch my own camera feed. Because I guess that's a private camera.
I wonder.
It?
Like
no one. My friend has one. They didn't know there was a camera on it. He's a cybersecurity expert. He bought one for his mum. It went missing and no one could find it ever again. I don't know what the fuck happened to it. I think someone nicked it.
So you'd have to have that you could look in the firmware or whatever, wherever it's stored in the Roomba, and you've got the encryption key.
Yeah,
because presumably it's
should
not.
Should be sold.
Or are they just transmit their video in clear? I don't know.
I doubt it, but yeah, I'd imagine that because someone's uploaded it and it's been around for a while and it's talked about, there must be an encryption key available.
It's been leaked from who makes Roombas?
The Roomba people did. Roomba. I think a hacktivist has broken in and found all the shit. I think. But someone's worked out that they've been recording all of them. So some hacktivist has broken in and found it all. Must have done. It hasn't come from inside. It's not an inside whistleblower. They just know that they've been filming everyone all of the time. But they didn't state that they were doing that or people wouldn't have fucking bought them.
No. Well, I thought they did. I thought that those Roombas were part of an experimental phase, in an R&D phase, where the people agreed to have the camera on the Roomba switched on and fed all the time.
Well, maybe they did. Maybe they signed an agreement to see.
I think that's it.
Helped.
I think that's
maybe
the,
that's what it
I
was.
I think that's the foundation of that story.
Okay,
but all the same, the issues it raises are still awesome.
Well, yeah.
And also, people were abused.
And Tesla didn't give you an option. It came as standard when you fucking bought it. It's like a weird contractual agreement. Like you're not even allowed to take it to a mechanic, can you, to get it fixed when it breaks?
Mm.
They have to come collect it because they don't want to give their intellectual property away to manufacturers, basically. It's like, fair enough, but your car breaks down. You have to wait a month for fucking Elon to pick it up on a truck. It's a bit annoying. But at the same time, you are not expecting people to sit around and get off on the fact that your corpse has just got... Your child has just been murdered. It's the parents on that. It's just awful. Little girl riding a bike, splattered. Everyone's watching that. It's awful. The parents have access to that then. Because it's on the internet, so they could go see it. If they type their daughter's name, is that what comes up? It's terrifying. There's loads of other stuff. They've been watching people having sex in the car and stuff as well. Obviously. All these middle-aged men. It's gore, isn't it? What is our obsession with gore? And has the internet fueled that? Is it because we're separated from how we used to be as humans? I guess gore is just normal life. Wartime. Oh,
no,
that person's
not really.
Had to hack off
I think
their leg.
That the sort of... there's a mythos of the Hobbesian horrible life of this nasty, brutish and short. And it's a bit Monty Python there.
No,
literally,
but
people
antibiotics, someone would have to hack their entire limb off because they still on that branch the other
week. Yeah, but it didn't like literally happen every day. I
Surely.
Mean, it was
war, starvation.
No, I think the myth of the abject horror of the past is not right, you know. But there's something else going on with the enabling. It's about persistence. It's like, in the past, that would just happen. And unless you were witness to
True.
It right there and then, it would just fade into the waters of life.
But there were some generations that just lived in absolute fucking hell from day one.
Of course, and there still are. And there probably always still will be. But the obsession, the kind of obsessing on it, and people going back to watch gore and to watch porn and to watch voyeuristic
account
of other people's misfortune and things like that is unusual.
It is.
And it kind of pokes a different psychological phenomenon than maybe we're equipped to talk about yet.
That's true. But I'm just wondering if the internet's, you know, making it more accessible and therefore it's causing a rise. So it'd be interesting to look at the numbers on that.
Yeah.
Because there's a reason. I don't know whether that would have happened 20 years ago. Would they have sat around and watched people dying on bikes for fun as at work? I don't know. It's interesting. Is it affecting our morals? That's what I'm asking. Is having this accessible to us at the click of a button in privacy to some extent, obviously not private, but in your own home, where no one else can apparently, as far as some people are aware, see what you're doing, is it therefore, because it's so accessible, creating less of a moral connection to it? I guess this would have all just been like a meadow before people.
Before the Tregon Wells came, I think it's 200 years ago, this was mostly forest that just ran down to the sea.
Just watching Mystic Britain, it's called, and it's like around looking at mystic sites, and apparently there was a lot of human sacrifice, mostly in Dorset. Really big thing here, around here.
You see at Bournemouth University? A massive hullabaloo in Portsmouth at the coffee shop that was ostensibly all about transgenderism.
Oh.
Was it at the Costa?
Yeah.
Somebody called someone and said, you're transphobic. Someone else said, and it was one of those. But my point was is that this argument wasn't about any of that.
Right.
It had started because one of the people wanted to pay cash.
Oh.
And that just got airbrushed out of the whole story.
Right.
And to me, like, that was the story.
Yeah. Okay. How did an argument arise from him not using a card or her not using a card?
Well, I mean, they frequently do more and more these days, right? Because people want to pay cash.
Right.
And they have a right to pay cash, is good. Money makes the world go round.
Yeah, and it helps homeless people.
The cashless society is a menace.
Yeah, homeless people are coming up to you now and going, have you got any spare change? You're like, no, I've only got my card. And they're like, can I walk you to the cash point? And everyone's like, but you might rob me. What if you pull out a knife when I'm getting my money and put my card in? So it's causing problems.
The disappearance of cash is a very, very grave danger.
Did I tell you that I found some guy selling NOS? You know, kind of, you know, frowned upon, not quite illegal. It kind of is, because they're, you know, not paying taxes or whatever. But they were using Google Pay. So I did a little social engineering, asked him a load of questions, you know, made a little purchase on some weird balloon, gave it to some other guy.
Right.
Just to see if it was a business registration or his personal account. So this guy is paying 30 quid for a NOS thing. He gets over 300 quid for it, and it puts it all through his actual bank account in England via Google Pay, and no one's bloody questioned it. He does that every single day of the week. He's making thousands and fucking pounds a year. Going through Google and his bank, no one's questioned it. And yet that, I've already spoken to a finance team and gone, how is that possible? Shouldn't be. Your bank is supposed to investigate that. And this guy's been doing it for years, he said. Absolutely years. Personal accounts, his own name. And he's just given his name to all these people.
Right.
Left, right and centre. It's so dangerous. I want to investigate this. We've now got these 24-hour metro banks. They do drive-through banking. So you can make a 3 a.m. deposit. I reckon we should do some investigative work where we go and we rent a little apartment across the road from one of these over the weekend, and we see who tops in and what kind of cars drive in and what age groups are driving in and depositing or withdrawing money at 3 a.m.
Cash money?
Money, yeah, cash. They can deposit any cash and it goes to worldwide banking. So basically money laundering, because they could deposit it to their offshore account from their Google Pay, so they can go there, do their transaction. Why are these all springing up? Why have we got 24-hour cash banks now? How are people getting away with using Google Pay? Because he said to me as well, I said, do you sell anything else? And he went, oh, sometimes sell a bit of weed, but we know people who like sell really hardcore drugs using Google Pay. And it's like, so you're telling me that there are smackheads, you know, smack dealers, huge, great big smack dealers that make millions of pounds a year walking around just using Google Pay in their bank. And no one's fucking questioned why £6 million has left their bank account this year.
One of the very strong arguments for the cashless society, or for really strong visibility.
It's to prevent that sort of thing.
It's to stop money laundering.
But it's
and yet the
better.
Bank. Well, I mean, what happened with it? Was it HSBC? I mean,
right.
It turns out that the banks are up to their necks. They're absolutely complicit in money laundering,
right.
And always have been.
And they clearly are. And Google and PayPal. Yeah. He said he uses Google and PayPal and Apple Pay, and no one gives a shit. And when speaking to people who are really high up in finance, they're like, oh no, Google and Apple Pay have promised us that they do that.
Why make such a specious argument that's about, you know, we're gonna be able to track the money flows of the rich and powerful? No,
no,
that's not gonna
white
happen.
Bad man is what
it's
they want.
It's gonna be legibility of right. everybody's pint and cigarette mm-hmm. and everybody's packet of crisps that they buy.
So they can reduce the benefits down because everyone's buying fags with it. That's what they'll claim.
Chinese style, cybernetic social algorithms, exactly.
Oh, they're not poor. They haven't got problems with food. They've all got a TV and a computer in their house.
Yeah.
Well, they have to have a computer or their children can't do homework, but we won't go there.
So I just can't buy the argument about money laundering uh-uh. being any kind of a genuine reason for pushing a cashless society.
And that him using that Google Pay and doing that every single day, making hundreds of pounds and not having it questioned, is a very, very clear example of exactly what is wrong. We go cashless, how are you going to chase it? It's meant to help, but actually it's just going to make it easier because you've got to go to Google and go, hi, because I guess you have to work with them because they're the facilitator. Mm. So if the bank want to investigate it, they're going to have to say, Google, can I have your account details for X user,
yeah.
please? They don't have the right to do that. And it might be very complex, the data you get back from them. So the bank might not be able to actually read it and understand it.
Yeah.
That creates a big problem. Maybe it's a skills gap.
Well, I definitely. Let's explore that one. Let's explore
the cashless society
the cash. Ed and I had a different take on it, and this is where I come from. You know, I did that interview with what's the White Lantern guys, the Cat Cashtastrophe.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was coming at it from a resilience point of view. Mm-hmm. Like, cash is like a lubricant in society,
definitely.
But it's also a buffer, like a big capacitor. It stores portable wealth.
Yes,
so that
a grain store.
Yeah, when the internet goes off, people aren't shooting each other over a loaf of bread 2 days later.
No.
Because they've got ability to trade. It's, it's actually a peacekeeping tool.
Is it
cash
back to
money
that
is
bread
a peacekeeping
and circus
tool.
Thing again, isn't it? We're going back to that bread and circus. The internet is considered, in a way, it's circus for a few days, like you just said.
Oh, I see.
We lose our circus,
yeah.
but after 3 weeks of not having internet, we start to lose our bread
it's
and
in,
our circus.
In, yeah,
that is
really interesting, because what you came up with then is you thought that things were all going to go pear-shaped because people were bored and they're not on their Xboxes anymore. And I'm thinking from
three
a slightly
weeks
more
later, though,
pragmatic.
The food stocks go down.
Well, much quicker
stocks,
than that. Much quicker.
Much
because
quicker.
Of adjusting.
3 weeks later, we are hungry.
Just-in-time supply chains are really, really fragile.
They're completely digitalised.
You switch off all of the digital communications
right.
and there will be no food very quickly.
Yeah, but if the internet goes off for 2 days, people whinge because they can't get their Netflix or whatever. But a week in, people will be whinging because Nan's starving to death now in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no water or heating for a week. And
that's,
you know,
a different order of ugly.
Yeah, yeah.
The army can only hand out food for so long.
Exactly, which is why I've got cupboards full of out-of-date food that you can eat forever.
that motivation's there everywhere in life, and I think it's that, you know, like if you're the police, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the crimes go unsolved,
yeah.
So you could be really miserable about it, right?
Or just celebrate the successes.
Or just celebrate the successes. And what I was thinking was, with like some jobs in tech, you said most of the time I write code and it works. That's
no.
a re- that well, I
sort of did I say that?
You kind of implied it. I mean, I feel that most of the time I write code and it works. It doesn't work right, then you have to debug it.
Oh, yeah, you have to debug it. But I'm not going to, yeah.
I think you get a lot of bang for your buck success-wise in development.
Yeah. I guess what I meant was, right, it's not that you write code and it works. It's like there's what I like, the black and whiteness of it. I like the autisticness of code.
And I think that it's actually a good career from that point of view is for developers, you get mostly successes eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
Or you're really shit coder,
yeah, yeah.
and you should get out of the game now. Right. But with cybersecurity, it's the other way around. I think most of the time we're failing. We're sort
yeah.
of in permanent retreat. You know,
I don't feel like that. I think I have a more positive look, you know. Like we face things that are really tough sometimes, you know, and we know that we're going to be more under threat this week because of the work that we do, because it can be seen as political, even though we're balanced and we're part of a group, the popcorn group, that say that we're balanced. But it upsets ruffles feathers, and they can be very aggressive. So we know we have threats, and when we have a week that we think, oh no, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen this week, and it goes by and nothing happens, and then it's been a month and nothing happened, I'm like, fucking didn't get into this. That's like a month-long celebration. Then we have an appraisal, and they're like, well done. It's like we did fuck all, to be honest. Well, we didn't. We didn't have to respond to anything, and we didn't have to like come in at 4 a.m, but we worked so hard for the year beforehand that it prevented anyone being able to just get in at short notice.
But
so we've done
you're right, but this is a general problem in security is that your successes are marked by something not happening.
The absence, yeah. I like entropy. Yeah, I get off on that, obviously.
Assist admin.
Nothing. Yay.
Nothing happened at all. Hey, you're amazing.
Yeah? Yeah. You did an update, you pressed one button, nothing went wrong.
Nothing went wrong. You've done an amazing job.
Everyone loves you, and it was really piss easy.
Right, and I got this as a sound designer as well. It's the most massive success when nobody notices the sound design at all.
Literally, you can't
get better than that.
That's true. That is true. Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's hard to find the positive.
Because that's something that I.
Well, you've got to recruit, right? You have to recruit, but maybe they're sending the wrong message.
Well, I tried to recruit that Google Pay guy, the one that I came up with earlier, the one selling the balloons, because he's quite benign. Like he could have gone out and sold some hardcore drugs. I'm sure where he lives, from what he told me, he can find him. Right, he's living in a shit part of London. They're all doing it. They're all selling worse stuff. He's buying a fucking canister from the balloon shop. And a pack of rubber balloons, and he's going up to people in pubs in front of the security and police and going, "Do you want a balloon, mate?" Because then no one gives a shit about a bit of laughing gas, as long as it's not killing them. And he's bought it, and it wasn't a balloon thing, right? It had the make on it.
Yeah. So you should get a clown outfit, shouldn't
you? Yeah, you should, yeah. You just go, "No, I'll make toy balloons." Yeah. What they do with them, there's nothing to do with me.
That's right. I could make some balloon animals filled with laughing gas and go, "There you go, love."
Just turn out on a clear, like looking like a McDonald's man, fine. Yeah. My balloon mate. Yeah. And he was lovely. He was like helping all these like rich kids in these bars like suck a balloon for the first time and enjoy it and get enjoyment out of it. But you know, he's quite nice, but he knows his stuff and he knows how to launder money on the internet and not get caught. And then
this is the guy that was doing the Google, right?
So I social engineered him a bit. I was like, "Oh, let's test it." And I was like, "You've been on the dark web." They're like, "Yeah, how do you get on it?" And I went, "Oh, Tor browser." "Oh yeah, we know that." And I'm like, "Oh right. So do you like this country?" "Do you? Because you know your shit, because you're a smart guy, right? That's why you're selling balloons and not fucking, you know, heroin." "Yeah, yeah, man, yeah, I do like this country." So he tells me he's from Nigeria and he had a really shit time before he came here. Get a lovely story, and I'm like, "Cool. So why don't you go and learn what I do and stop selling shitty balloons on a street corner?" And he likes his country, and he's not going to fuck with it. So it's like, all right, well, if you want to get yourself out of this life and you can do things like that, you need to get yourself on Hack the Box right now, mate.
Yeah.
And if you can start doing some of that code and do some of that, he said, "Where do I go after that?" I said, "Go do a degree."
And then he'd end up on my course, and I'd have no money to teach the poor bastard. We'd have to go out and sell some balloons. I should have mentioned that at Solent. You know, it's like, why don't we just recruit more people that are like a bit more street and they've got ideas, and then we'll use that money to fund our department. Yeah,
that makes sense.
We can refresh the canteen at a water tap over there if you want. I think it must be 6 o'clock because the lifeguards are announcing that they're leaving the beach.
Oh shit.
So that's normally 6.
Cool.
I think.
Is that up here?
We've got to go back up to the second, third, sixth.